Spirit, we received an outline that we'd like one. If you want to follow along with the lesson this evening, we've been going through the book of Philippians on Sunday evenings and looking at verse-by-verse study. And just four chapters in the New Testament book in Paul's letter, but we're already on lesson number nine. So I've been taking, I thought I might take more verses at one setting, but even like tonight, six verses, I think, give us a complete in our, not only our relationship to God, but our relationship to one another. It's a lesson of encouragement. So I just titled it from the text, One Thing I Do, and that's what Paul said. So here's what the text, how the text reads. Philippians chapter 3, beginning at verse 12. So Paul says, not that I've already obtained or am already perfected, but I press on that I may lay hold of that for which Christ Jesus has also laid hold of me. Verse 13, brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Therefore, let us, bring it home. Let us, as many as are mature, have this mind. And if in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you. Nevertheless, to the degree that we have already attained, let's walk by that same rule. Let's be of the same mind. Then he begins verse 17. Brethren, join in following my example. I kind of put in your notes. Well, I didn't kind of, I did. Put in your notes, I don't know anyone who takes on a task wanting to fail at it. Just don't know when that happens. Everybody from in a business or corporation or whatever it is, it's from top to bottom. I think we all want to be successful in the task that's been assigned to us. And I think sometimes, I know I've done this, you know, even when I've failed or I've heard other people when they mess the assignment up, they say, you know what, I've taken some positives out of that. Or they may even say, I didn't get it right, but I learned from that. Or may even say, well, I know who to ask next time. I know where to go for help. So even because we want to be successful. Well, one of the best ways, especially thinking personally, to learn success is to imitate the pros. You don't have to be a pro, just someone that has done something well. You know, I take advantage of it when I can to listen to another speaker, a Bible class teacher, or a visiting preacher, even in other places. You know, I'll go if they're having a revival meeting, a gospel meeting, a workshop. I just want to see how they make their presentations. You know, I copy and I look at their manner of speech, even their dress, their posture, voice inflection, the gestures, whatever it is. And it's all done, with at least on my part, to get as close as possible to a successful style or achievement. When I see something that I like, and of course it's subjective, you know, I think, oh, I want to do that. I want to copy that. Of course, the opposite's true too. I see something that someone does, and I think, oh, no, I don't do that. It's difficult, but I want to be successful too. In the content of the lesson, the presentation. I want to come across as, you know, in a way that you take to heart what's been said. I put in your notes, you know, if something works, we copy it. I'm not going to copy failure. So, especially when Paul closed this section out of our lesson this evening, brethren, join in following my example. So Paul, everybody looks at himself and said, this is how I want you to behave. or think, have an attitude. And then he also added, and we're going to get to it, and note those also who so walk, as you have us for a pattern. So in this text, our lesson tonight, I think Paul gives us a brief outline, just six verses, for success in spiritual living. Number one, dissatisfaction. Verse 12. Not that I've already attained or am already made perfect. I mean, I'm thinking when I read that, Paul, you're there. You're the apostle, the one selected. You've been on the missionary journeys. You've had some success, a lot of success. You know, you're head and shoulders above us. I'm thinking, Paul, why don't you just rest a while? Take it easy from a human viewpoint. But he says, no, I haven't obtained. There's still room for improvement. Paul says, I'm not perfected. I haven't reached that, you know, that sinless situation. No. You know, there's, he might be saying, you know, there's miles to go before my destination. I haven't arrived. So the next phrase that Paul uses, he says, I press on. Well, that word press, you stop and just put a definition on that. It means to forge ahead toward a fixed goal. Strain. Propel. Push. So in other words, in our spiritual life, there has to be that sense of dissatisfaction to the point where we want to push ourselves to do more. Maybe it might be an involvement, study, a prayer life, inviting others, fellowship, whatever it is. Paul is saying, I want to push in that. He said, I would grasp that for which Christ grasped me. So whatever hold that Christ has on Paul says, I want to grasp that intention that Christ has for me in my life. Grasp that for which he has grasped me. Wow. I put in your notes too, it's tragic to see Christians self-satisfied with their spiritual development. I really heard a Christian say this because they don't want to admit failure, but if they might say something, they might be, Brian, I don't need more Bible classes. And if they haven't said it, that's what I see, because they don't come. I might even say, Brian, I don't think I need too many worship assemblies. Really? Brian, I don't need a lot of fellowship, gospel meetings, workshops. I don't need that, really. I think they fail to recognize that dissatisfaction is an essential tool in building spiritual success. That's what Paul said. Paul said, I haven't obtained. This is the Apostle Paul, God's chosen. I haven't apprehended. There's plenty of warnings against a false estimate of our spiritual condition, too. One is in the revelation of Jesus to the churches. It's in six verses, but verse 1, to the church in Sardis. It says, I know your works. You have a name that you're alive. Oh, a reputation. When people think of you, they think, oh, success. But Jesus went on to say to this church, but you're dead. You have a name that you're alive, but Jesus' estimation is you're dead. And he can say that because he just began the text, I know your works. So he says, be watchful. Strengthen the things which remain, he said to the church, Jesus did, that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfected before God. Well, that's what Paul is saying. No matter what I've already accomplished, I still need to do more or press on. Mm. 1 Corinthians 12 or 10 verse 12 says, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Years and years ago, before I became a school teacher, I was in outside sales. I worked for a company called McBee Systems. And it sold bookkeeping forms. And Mark Piercy, who was the sales manager for McBee Systems, he would sometimes call in the sales staff. And to the poorer performers, there were only five or six of us in the sales office, but to the poorer performers, he would review their techniques and call them in and really talk nice and soft to them, go over their prospect list. Let's set some goals. Let me offer you some help. Very sympathetic to those that were not meeting goal. Then he might call in the sales leader. And he would tell him, why didn't you sell more? Don't sit on success. You made quota by Wednesday. What did you do Thursday and Friday? Or he might say, don't be satisfied. In other words, he wouldn't let the sales leader off. And there was a week that I was the sales leader. Didn't happen all the time. I worked for the company for about 4 years before I went into a different sales job. But I was a sales leader, and I was in the office in the middle of the afternoon, and Mark calls me in. I'm on the board. My name's at the top. But I'm in the office at 2 o'clock, and I'm going to write up some orders. And he says, get out of here. There's still two more hours of sales time. Wouldn't let you sit on success. That's right. Old Mark Piercy. The front runner received a review of the marching orders. The poor performers come in. What can I do to help you? How can I assist you? Let's kind of talk to me. But the sales leader, get out of here. Do more. Dissatisfaction contributes to success. I haven't obtained. Number two, I need to press on here. Direction. Verse 13, but one thing I do. Paul's life, at least in this section of the letter, is dominated by a singleness of purpose. So I said in your notes, he's not going to be sidetracked. He's not going to go and give it a half-hearted effort. I'm not going to allow myself to be distracted from the main objective in my spiritual life. So I put in your little phrase that I learned way, way back when. Obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off the goal. Let that one sink in. Obstacles are what you see when you take your eyes off the goal. You see, as Christians, in order to be successful, we need a major goal in which all the lesser goals contribute to its achievement. When I think of heaven, my home, that's the goal. So to accomplish heaven, my reaching heaven, I'm going to attend the Bible class. I'm going to attend the worship assembly. And I'm not going to be distracted or look at this as an obstacle in my spiritual life. It may be, I have to drive a distance. I have to get up earlier. Look at it. It's every week we have a Bible class on Sunday morning. Every week there's two worship assemblies on Sunday. There's a Wednesday night Bible class. Those are not obstacles. Those contribute to the success of our ultimate goal. You take your eyes off the goal, or when you look at, if that's what you're going to look at, the obstacles, you'll take your eyes off the goal. Same thing in your job. Get a paycheck every Friday. To get that, you put up with a lot, well, depending on where you work. Look at the traffic. I'm going to quit my job. You see the traffic I have to get through to get to my workplace? How far I have to drive? Look at the early hours. If you start looking at the obstacles, you'll take your eye off the goal. And you won't see them as contributing to your success to get that paycheck. So I don't see traffic as an obstacle. Well, I do, but but I would get up either earlier. I would factor in a detour or an accident. Early hours, you go to bed earlier. Whatever it takes to overcome that obstacle, so you don't see it as an obstacle to achieve the goal. So Paul says, direction, one thing I do. And it doesn't matter how gifted someone is. If he doesn't know where he's going, he's going to settle for second best. We need direction. And even in this, in the life of this congregation, when we have a service to render or something to accomplish, it seems like we're happier. You know, when there's a work party and those that come down to the building to do the work party, whatever it is, it seems like, well, there's almost a whistle while we work. There's just a friendship, a fellowship. You know, when we have the vacation Bible school, or when we're involved in just rounding up these toys for the orphanage down in Tecate, just in the last couple of weeks. Yeah. And that gave us direction. And you saw people getting, even though there was an obstacle, oh, now I have this to do too. I already have so much to do, but I want to do this. There was direction, and I'm going to make the sacrifice or do whatever it takes to get that gift and make sure it gets to the right place at the right time. You may have not realized that. But yeah, this made me happy. I was giving a gift voluntarily, a gift that was needed, and I sacrificed. And you need, when those three things are in place, there's a joy in gift giving. You take any one of those three out of the equation, and you're going to lose joy in gift giving. You know that? Let me step aside. Remember when Jesus, in Hebrews chapter 12, the opening verse where it says, concerning Jesus, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Where is the joy in a cross? Where is there a joy in a scourge or crucifixion? Because three things were in place. He was giving the gift sacrificially. It cost him his life. You ever give a gift that didn't cost you something? Oh, here you go. It didn't mean a lot. But if you give a gift that costs you, sometimes when we give gifts, something homemade, man, it costs me time, effort, talent. The second piece of the equation, not only if it's a sacrificial gift, but if you give it voluntarily. The forced gift takes away the joy. You know, when my brother and I might be fighting over a toy of some kind when we were youngsters, and Mom might come out and said, "Rod, give Brian the toy." You know how Rod gave me the toy? Here. There wasn't any joy in giving me that toy because he didn't do it voluntarily. Jesus gave his life voluntarily. And then he gave a gift that was needed. You ever give a gift that somebody didn't need? It took the joy away. One of my classic illustrations, when we were married, we had a wedding shower, had to be somebody else's, and we're there, and we're rubbing over somebody else. Wait till you see what they open the gift that we gave them. Oh, we got it. We went through a lot of sacrifice, hardship. Well, we really got them something they really wanted and needed. And then they open a package that somebody else gave them, and it's the very same thing we're going to give them. And all of a sudden, oh, they don't need what we got. The joy just went away. When you give a gift that's sacrificial, which Jesus did, a gift that was needed, and he gave it voluntarily, there was joy in going through the crucifixion. Take away any one of those three, and the joy of gift giving is gone. I don't know how I got off on this. I have to hurry. Where was I? Now don't say conclusion. Where was I in my notes?
About following your toes.
All right, direction. We need the direction. That's right. All right. Now, even when you're going to go in the direction you're looking. And that's what Paul is. He said direction. One thing I do. Now, if you take your eyes, Christine gets on me too, because I'm looking at when we're driving down the freeway, I'm looking at the scenery. Oh. It doesn't take very long to go boom, 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 boom. You will go in the direction you're looking. If you look to the right, you might be not a hard steer, but you're going to veer to the right. Same way in life. You and I will walk in the direction we're looking. If you're not looking toward heaven, if that's not your goal, then you're going to settle for something else. An attitude of life, you will walk in the direction you're looking. Whatever it is. Let me go. You know, when I was teaching special ed, I had a boy named Sean. I had a lot of kids, but little Johnny or little Sean, but he would do that. He would just be like this and what? And you know, he would just trip over things. I'd have to say, Sean, either look where you're walking or walk where you're looking. That's the way it is in life. Direction, number two. Number three. Oh, desertion, forgetting the things which are behind. Now, obviously, we remember the past, but it's not done to repeat the mistakes. But I want to forget the things that are behind, and for the definition is no longer be influenced or affected in a negative way. Don't allow the past to hinder your present progress. You know, park the past in the right place. You know, when I was in sales, again, that boy, you had to forget the past. The negative rejection galore. 4 years I worked for that McBee company, and it was just outside sales. You just take your little booklet and just knock on mom and pop stores, park your car, go through the industrial park or wherever it was. Do you want what I'm selling? No. You want what I'm selling? You want what I'm selling? And one time I did, after a while, you try to find the humor where you can. So I walked into one place and the person up front said, well, I said, would you show the boss my flyer? And she went to the back and the door was left partly open and he just watered it up and threw it in the can. And so when she came out, she says, no, he's not interested. I said, oh, well, if he's not interested, can I have my flyer back? I knew he'd already watered it up. And she said, oh, no, he'll keep the flyer. I said, okay. Yeah, I got my lap out of it or my thing. The other thing old Mark Piercy would always say, you know, it takes 100 contacts, you only make one sale. At least that was his thing. So for every no, Brian, you're one step closer to a yes. Oh, yeah, that's a great encouragement. I'm one more step closer to a yes, but rejection. Paul says desertion. I need to forget the things that are past. Wow. And I put two reasons. If you don't forget, you'll remember them to distraction. You'll think, well, I failed so much. I don't want to try again. I just remember all my failures. I remember my past. The next one, we tend to might live off previous successes. Well, I've had a lot of accomplishments in my past. I think I'm going to just stop and rest. Paul said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. You imagine a runner in a race constantly looking back while he's racing toward the goal? They don't do that. Number four, let me press on. Number four, and reaching forward. Reaching. In the next phrase, I press toward the goal. Even when I was in sales at the close of the day, the attitude was, oh, so it's 4:30, make one more call. It was just the attitude. Make one more. Determination. Do one more. He says, I press. That's in mean by definition. Intense endeavor. A hunter pursuing an animal. I misspelled that in your notes. Exert. Get it. You know, gut it out. Stretch. You know, when I finally got a teaching credential and became a school teacher, in the elementary school, severely handicapped, but put that sign by the door of my classroom, and it said triumph. And by definition, it's try with a little oomph behind it. And that's the way we measured success in special education students. It wasn't the end result. It was just the effort. Try with a little oomph behind it. Determination. I reach. I press. You know, we have a one-year-old granddaughter. Tell you about my granddaughter. But when you hold her and she starts, now that she's 1 year old last week, and following you guys, Chris, you know that, but you hold that baby in your arms and she looks and sees something, and almost out of my arms, you have to really hold on, because she is going to reach and press, bend that back backwards, you know, that way. That's what Paul says. I reach, I press. When she did that this week, I thought, well, that's a visual of my Sunday night sermon. What you're doing, Monroe, is exactly what we need to do in our life spiritually. Reach and press for that which we want. For the prize, and I just put all the crowns that the Bible lists, crown of incorruptible crown of righteousness, crown of glory, crown of life. The last one is discipline. Verses 15 through 17, have this mind. Walk by this same rule. Brethren, join in following my example. Have us for a pattern. It's not enough to run hard. You have to run by the rules. So you enter Christianity. You start out a spiritual life. Stay on the course. Follow the guidelines. You know, don't break the rules. And finish. Finish. Paul uses two illustrations in 2 Timothy chapter 2.
I didn't put that one in your notes today.
In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 and 5, he gives two examples. One's a good soldier, and then the athlete. Let's do that. Run with endurance. Pattern, illustration, a model, visual. And he's saying, brethren, join in following my example and note those who so walk. We have those in our congregation who have preceded us in death. We call names. Just think about those in our past who have set the example. Set the example of faith. They are a visual, a testimony that is worth the effort. They stayed steadfast to the end. So think about those, but then you can think about those around us too. I'll just call one name, but I'm always impressed that Elaine is here. Elaine, how old, she can't hear. How old are you? Carol, how old is she? How old is Elaine?
93.
She's here for Bible class?
No, 94.
94, yeah. So you're 93 and a half. So she's here for Bible class? Worship assembly this morning, back this evening, and she'll be here, well, not this coming Wednesday, but she's here on Wednesday nights. I remember when Edna Pruitt, she's passed on now, but when she was going through her cancer treatments, typically there was one that was always scheduled on Wednesday, late afternoon. When she finished her chemotherapy, she had her husband, Bert, drop her off at the building for Wednesday night Bible class. I want to copy that faith. And so Paul mentions that, follow me, you know, join me in my example, and note those also. So we can look around. This is what Christianity looks like. And copy that. So that's the lesson. We'll continue this next Sunday morning. Yeah, there's one more Sunday night in this month than the first Sunday night of the singing, probably. All right, so we'll continue this next week with a few more verses following this. And I think the next section is kind of rejoice in the Lord. So, that's one place we can always rejoice. not always the circumstances around us or that we're in, they're not always an occasion for rejoicing, but there's always one situation, that's our relationship with God. And so that's why at the close of a lesson, we sing a song. The song is, we typically say, an invitation song or a song of encouragement, a song of exhortation, meaning edification to build us up. And so here's an opportunity for you, if your relationship with God is not right, or you want to make a resolution, express a desire, ask for a prayer, we can accomplish that. And so at the close of the song, if you just let that be known, you can hold your hand up, you can come and sit beside me. But at the close of the song, we can certainly honor a request in your life and offer aid. So let's stand together and sing the song that Dennis has selected for us.